First and foremost, any book you pick up is a simulator. And if you're picking up the right books, it's a leadership simulator. This is a cautionary tale.
Hey everyone, this is Major Haziano speaking, and welcome back to the Soch Podcast, where nothing human is alien to us. We're recording this episode in July of 2021, which is a busy time of year at West Point as it is right in the middle of cadet summer training. In between all the military training, though, we hope that the cadets and our listeners are able to enjoy some time off in the warm weather and perhaps get some summer reading done. In line with that theme, for this episode, we're excited to have retired Admiral James Stavridis, former Supreme Commander of NATO and former Dean of the Fletcher School at Tufts University, here on the podcast to discuss his recent book, 2034, A Novel of the Next World War. Admiral Stavridis co-wrote this book with fellow military veteran Elliot Ackerman. Soch Podcast alum Major Tom Fox took a break from his own military training to read 2034 and to ask Admiral Stavridis about writing a fiction novel as a retired flag officer, his thoughts on why there is no such thing as an end to history, and the importance of a nonpartisan military in the 21st century. Well, that's enough for the introduction, so without further ado, I'll pass it off to Major Tom Fox for the interview.
Sir, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Soch Podcast for summer reading, recommending your new book, 2034, with Elliot Ackerman.
Well, I know I'm going to lose a lot of readers, but as an Annapolis graduate, I'm required to say, go Navy, beat Army.
We can start there, and maybe we'll end somewhere else, and we'll try and convince you to come on over to the other side, sir. But for our listeners, they well know your resume, but I can't not mention your incredible career in the Navy, rising to the rank of a four-star admiral, multiple combatant commands, the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, and then in your post-military life, leading the Fletcher School, working with the Carlyle Group now, just an incredibly impressive resume. And where I want to start our conversation is really talking about professional reading, because for your whole life, you've been a huge advocate of reading as a way to make better leaders. What is it about reading itself that is so important for developing leaders, particularly for aspiring junior military officers?
First and foremost, any book you pick up is a simulator. And if you're picking up the right books, it's a leadership simulator. And what I mean by that is, whether it's a novel or history, as you read a book, as someone who aspires to be a good leader, you should be trying to imagine, what would I do in that situation? And so you pick up, for example, To Kill a Mockingbird, which is an extraordinary book, seemingly ripped from the pages of America today. You know, it's a book about racial injustice, a book about a young woman's coming of age, a book about incredibly hard choices that the protagonist, Atticus Finch, has to make. You can pick up that book and read it and put yourself in that situation and say, what would I have done? Or Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, who goes back 1,000 years in time. He's the smartest person in the world by definition, right? He knows the earth is round. He knows what gunpowder is, but he can't convince anybody. And so you have to ask yourself, what would I do in that situation? And similarly, you can pick up Grant's memoirs, something near and dear to the heart of the Soch Department, I'm sure, which I think, by the way, is the greatest military memoir ever written. But put yourself in that book and imagine what you would do. So I find leadership is like a force multiplier for your life. Every time you pick up a book, you enter another life, another person's mind. And secondly, they're all simulators if you read them right and you use them in that way, consciously thinking about, and by the way, discussing with your friends, your mentors, your subordinates. For all those reasons, I think leadership comes in many ways from what we read. And so, as you said, I wrote a book, The Leader's Bookshelf, which is 50 books to make you a better leader. They're not Jim Stavridis's thoughts on leadership. Some are pure leadership books. Others are novels, to the ones I just mentioned. But read, read, read. I think especially as a junior officer, when you're forming the corpus, the capital, the intellectual capital of your life and career.
I love that recommendation, sir. And you know, looking at the Leader's Bookshelf, which is such a fantastic book because of the way it takes those lessons from across a whole range of really, really senior officers, but it's not just military history and it's not just leadership books. It's that, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird is a leadership book or can be a leadership book. And, the same way with the Mark Twain recommendation, I find myself reading a lot of novels and talking to people about them, and they're not about war or they're not about politics necessarily, but they're about the human experience, and the human experience is highly related to leadership and politics and war.
Indeed. And let's face it, the novel that I've just written, 2034, A Novel of the Next World War, you know, it's about a war between the US and China, but it's not Tom Clancy. It's not good guys, bad guys, good guys win in the end kind of story. It's about very human characters, US, Chinese, Russian, Iranian, and Indian. And it allows these characters to jump on the stage and tell their story from their perspective. That's what we set out to do in writing it. And it is in many ways a book that I think can be read not only about geopolitics, but about the human experience and leadership.
I think that's exactly right, sir. And that's why we wanted to make that our, the book 2034, your new book with Elliot Ackerman, our summer reading recommendation. I read it and I couldn't help but say, hey, you know, cadets, West Point cadets, recent alumni, junior officers out there, this is a book that makes you think. And I think one of the things that's so fantastic about it is that it's character driven, and war itself seems to be a pretty central character. I was thinking of, you know, Bob Jervis and Perception and Misperception in International Politics, or Tom Schelling and the concept of deterrence theory, how that works. Did you and Mr. Ackerman consciously weave in these kind of big debates in political science, or did it just come naturally given your experiences and your interests?
The latter. And just to say a word about my co-author, you know, it's like in the old movie, Jerry Maguire, you know, you complete me. The two of us are both people who came out of the profession of arms, but boy, talk about different ends of the business. I'm a seagoing surface officer, a destroyer officer, deep expertise in cyber, space, connectivity, air defense at sea, missile defense. Elliot is like many West Point graduates. He's a veteran of those forever wars. He's a US Marine infantry officer, recipient of the Silver Star, Bronze Star Combat V, saw very tough fighting, Purple Heart, then went on to be a White House fellow, then decided to be a novelist. An amazing person. But the two of us have very different views and perceptions and life experiences. The one thing we have in common is we're both graduates of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. So to conclude, as I look at the world, the intellectual preparation that I got at the Fletcher School, much like cadets at West Point are lucky enough to get in the Soch department, deeply informed the novel. And therefore, yes, we felt that as we wrote it, we were bringing all of our life experience, but also our study, our intellectual capital to the marketplace of the novel as well. And by the way, it hit number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list. Not bad for a book about a war with China.
Not bad at all. And for an admiral, not a novelist, on that byline. As someone who studies Chinese politics and taught the Chinese politics course in Soch, sir, I also thought of it, I think, a little bit in a military officer myself, I've been thinking about the US-China relationship for a long time, think about the military aspects of it. But I think one of the big values of the book is that it is very accessible to someone who hasn't been thinking about this problem set or has been watching this develop over time. Did you have a target reader in mind? Did you want to speak to a military audience? Did you want to speak to a broader lay audience? Are you talking to the decision makers in Washington in the room where it happens?
Kind of all of the above, but at heart, this is a book that I want the public to read, public very broadly speaking. I want to walk down a beach in North Florida where I'm coming to you from, the beaches of Jacksonville, this summer, and see a couple of copies of 2034 out there under the umbrellas. Equally, I'm hoping that my dear friend, Kurt Campbell, who is the director of Asian Affairs on the National Security Council, has a copy on his desk. I ensured that he does in that case. But yeah, I want the broad audience. And I think that that's the power of fiction. You know, people say, well, you know, Admiral, you've written 9 books of nonfiction. You've had bestsellers on that side of the aisle. Why do a novel? And the short answer is because of audience reach. You want people to understand the danger here. This is a cautionary tale. This is in line with the Cold War fiction of Dr. Strangelove, of On the Beach by Neville Shute, The Third World War by Sir John Hackett. We need to be able to imagine, A, how easy it would be to stumble into a war, like the Europeans did, for example, in August of 1914, and B, how catastrophic it would be, how enormously diminished both the United States and China would be, even if we could avoid an apocalyptic end. And in 2034, by the way, minor spoiler alert, it's not the apocalypse. The world survives, but both nations suffer deeply. Another way to put it is there's no good guys and bad guys here. The villain is war.
That's a fantastic distinction you make there, sir, between speculative fiction and that cautionary fiction. Because last summer we actually recommended Burn In by August Cole and P.W. Singer,
who
previously wrote a very good book, and they previously wrote Ghost Fleet as well, also a great book. But a little bit more of that speculative fiction, saying, you know, what are the specific technologies, or you know, how might those change societies? Where the cautionary fiction element, where you really are looking at the human side of making decisions and realizing that there's miscommunication happening here.
Yeah.
And like a war between the US and China is not in either side's interest, quite clearly.
No. And you know, I think the odds are high that we will avoid that outcome. But boy, there's a non-minor case that we could, through miscalculation. I mean, again, go back to 1914. Here you have economies that are incredibly intertwined. You know, often people say to me, oh, Admiral, you know, we'll never go to war with China because our economies are so intertwined and it's not in anybody's interest to go to war. You know, go back and reread Barbara Tuchman's magisterial, The Guns of August, August 1914. Here are a series of economies deeply intertwined, the families interrelated by blood and marriage. The Kaiser is the grandson of Queen Elizabeth. War was impossible. There were serious academic books written in the first decade of the 20th century about war's over, never going to see another war because of all those reasons. Well, how'd that turn out? You know, World War I, 20 million dead. You can drop a plumb line to the Second World War, another 60 million dead, 80 million dead, the bloodiest century in human recorded history. So we need to be very careful about saying, you know, we can avoid that. We can, you know, we're so intertwined. We're so civilized now. We can just pick up the phone and call each other. And also don't forget, to an audience of cadets and junior officers, these are young people on the front lines, right? When I was in my mid-30s, I was captain of a destroyer. I was like 36 years old, and I had 400 people on my destroyer banging around in the Arabian Gulf. And hey, I was the old guy. I was the most experienced mariner and tactician in the boat.
Yes, sir.
And you know, these are very young people, and up in the sky, the people, like aviators like you, you know, they're in their, many in their 20s, flying high-end, high-performance jets. They're nose-to-nose in the South China Sea. Could a miscalculation occur? Boy, you bet. And again, back to World War I, August, what's the spark? It's an assassination in an obscure corner of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And suddenly the world's plunged into war. And by 1918, the Austro-Hungarian Empire is gone. The Russian Empire is gone, and the Ottoman Empire is gone. So these things happen. The big doors swing on small hinges sometimes. And so we need, I would argue, cautionary tales like 2034 to wake us up so that we don't stumble into a war.
For sure, because I imagine if you asked a whole host of people in 1910 or 1912 about possible imaginable futures, they wouldn't say that these empires, these long-standing empires, would disappear. It would be unimaginable. So when you have a cautionary fiction, you can use the power of imagination to say, we should think harder about this. We can figure out a way to avoid these possibilities.
Yeah, and to continue this theme, we've just signed a contract with Penguin Press, our publisher, largest publisher in the world, for a 2-book sequel to 2034, which will turn this into a trilogy. The next one is 2054, which is a novel about civil unrest in the United States with a technological backdrop of artificial intelligence, quantum computing. So it will follow the surviving characters deep into the century and will unpackage the kind of tension we have in the United States today. How does that play out over the next 35 years? And the technology that's coming that is beyond our current cyber world. And then the third book, 2074, is about climate, about the impact of climate on global security. And I said to someone the other day, yeah, it's going to be 2074 is when the climate chickens come home to roost. And somebody said, yeah, and they'll be like on a rotisserie, they're going to be roasted. And, you know, they will be if we're not careful. So it'll be a kind of a package about the 21st century. And those two books will come out over the next 3 years, 18 months. And hopefully people will read them, appreciate them, and it'll be part of a conversation that avoids the kind of catastrophic outcomes.
Yes, sir. I look forward to reading both of them. And another thing I loved about 2034 was you and Elliot Ackerman really approached it from a literary perspective. You know, there's very interesting characters. You're not just running through the strategic calculations. You open with a quote from Herman Melville. You close with a William Faulkner quote. If I might just read that Faulkner quote, because I think it frames things so well. It's because no battle is ever won, they're not even fought. The field only reveals to man his own folly and despair, and victory is an illusion of philosophers and fools. And to read that and to know that, you know, behind that is these two warriors, you know, a 4-star admiral and this, you know, silver star winning Marine infantry officer, and that closing line that victory is an illusion of philosophers and fools, it really hammers the point home incredibly well.
I'll give you another quote that's on the wall over here. I was at a dinner in Berlin in 2009, so about a decade ago, with Henry Kissinger. And Kissinger said that every solution is merely the key to the next problem you will have to solve. That's a pretty good line. And I think that's what Faulkner was getting at. It's not that you can't solve a problem in front of you, it's that there will be subsequent problems that you have to face. And there's no final victory. This was the great fallacy of Francis Fukuyama's The End of History. History doesn't end. I often say, you know, the worst thing about dying, other than all the obvious things, and particularly leaving your beloved wife and children and grandchildren in my case, the worst thing about dying is you don't know how the story comes out. What's going to happen in North Korea? Why is Kim Jong-un losing weight? What's going to happen with Iran, with Raisi coming in as a hardline president? Will I hate to even say these words, will Kabul fall to the Taliban? I mean, there are fascinating storylines that are out there that, you know, you hope to see come out. And on a grander scale, are we going to surmount climate? I think we will. Are we going to avoid a war with China? I'd say odds of that are probably higher that we will. Will artificial intelligence dominate us instead of the other way around? Who knows? You know, these are fascinating storylines. And that's why I've always loved the study of international relations, because it's like 1,000 great novels that are unfolding right in front of you.
Constantly. And it's that kind of never ending interactive element is what makes it so fascinating.
And that's what Faulkner was, I think, getting at is, you know, victory is an illusion. It doesn't mean that you can't win a round or two. And, you know, for example, we certainly won a major round in 1945. We had a chance to create close to a century of American real strength in the world. We triumphed over fascism. Pretty extraordinary moment. That wasn't illusory. What would be the illusion would be that solved it all, that it was the end of history, because history goes on. And today we face challenges from China, from a resurgent Russia, from a difficult pair of interlocutors in North Korea and Iran. I think the odds are better than even that democracy will solve those problems as well, because human history, I think, is on the side of democracy and our values, as imperfectly as we do execute them, but they're the right values. And so as I look at the future, the only illusion out there is deciding that there's some perfect end to all this, and it won't end. The challenges will continue, as Kissinger told us.
I think that's fantastic, sir. And I really, really like the way you intersect Kissinger's quote with the Faulkner quote to illuminate it even further. It shows kind of how well read you are, and how over the course of your career, you've really leaned on the experience of reading to make yourself a better officer, a better mentor, certainly also a better subordinate as you made your way, through your career. So we do want to keep our cadets reading. We want to keep our recent alumni reading. So obviously we're going to have them get that, or hope they pick up the Leader's Bookshelf, which is fantastic. Walks you through a kind of Cliff Notes version of a whole lot of things you should read the full versions of, but the notes from Admiral Stavridis are pretty helpful.
Thank you. And I want to sort of wrap up with another quote from the book, because it also makes a point about the way history is moving, and something important, I think, for all of us in the military to think about. And the quote is from Abraham Lincoln. It's also in 2034. And it's Lincoln saying that all the armies of Europe, were they even commanded by a Napoleon, could not drink a cup of water from the Mississippi River without our permission. And what he meant by that was that when we stand together, we can surmount any challenge. And what ought to worry us these days, in my view, is less the rise of China, the dangers Russia poses, North Korea, Iran. We'll get through those. What I worry about are the internal divisions in our country. And I think collectively, we, as Americans, we need to work on bringing ourselves back into alignment. And here I think the military has an important role to play, if nothing else, than as an example of being apolitical, being nonpartisan. These are important times that the public can look at the military and say, we're smart, we're informed, but we're not taking sides in this political debate. And as we go forward, I know that's something that's being discussed in places like West Point and Annapolis and Colorado Springs. Those are the real challenges for our country. So let's try and address them through culture of service and encouraging people to work together, and above all in the military, by maintaining our apolitical stance.
I think that's exactly right, sir. And I think reading hard books and having thoughtful, deep discussions about these things, not only within the walls of the academy, but with civilian peers who went to other colleges and who are doing other paths and contribute to the country in other ways, is actually really, really helpful. So we appreciate that recommendation. We'll tell people to get out there, read 2034, to have these hard conversations. And we can't thank you enough for your time today to be on the Soch podcast. I know it's not Annapolis, it's West Point, but we can be on the same team for certain things too.
And let me close in all seriousness by saying that I have been an admirer of the Soch department for decades. I have so many good friends who have taught there, and innumerable friends who have gone through as students. But I look at that portion of the long gray line, those who teach there, including yourself, Tom, be very proud. It's an extraordinary jewel in the crown of military intellectual thought. And I mean that.
Thank you so much for saying so, sir. And we'll be reading 2034, certainly talking about it for a long time to come. Maybe having those conversations displaced by 2054 and 2074 before too long. But I also know that people will be talking about 2034, not only at West Point, but in Washington, in Beijing, New Delhi, Moscow, Tehran, and beyond. So thanks for writing it. Thanks for your contribution. And thank you once again for taking the time with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Soch Podcast. Thank you to Admiral Stavridis for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with us for our listeners. Interested personnel can get a copy of 2034 and A Leader's Bookshelf at local bookstores and libraries. A special thanks to Major Tom Fox for coming back onto the podcast and leading this interview. If you enjoyed what you heard on our podcast, please be sure to subscribe and to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whichever streaming service you are using. Please also feel free to send any comments, critiques, or suggestions to sochresearchlab@westpoint.edu. That's SOSH, Research, Lab, at westpoint.edu. We love to hear back from our listeners and are always looking for new episode ideas. The views expressed in this podcast belong to those of the speakers and should not be seen as reflective of the official positions of the U.S. Military Academy, the United States Army, the Department of Defense, or any government entity. And lest we forget, thanks to the West Point Band for letting us use their music. This is Major Haziano signing off. Till next time.